Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, Jason, what's going on, man? Where are we?
I'm angry, man. That's pretty much where I am. I just got off the phone with my dad. I just had to call him and just ask him how to manage this anger that I'm feeling right now. You know, the demonstrations, the protests that have been going on, have now been, you know, it's widely talked about here in Sweden. And I think we'll get into that a little later, but the way that Swedish media, and I'm talking about 6 of the biggest newspapers in this country, the way they're covering this is on a scale from totally false to denying to delegitimizing. It's just, it's awful. Mm. It's really, really awful. And I don't really know what to do with that emotion right now.
Well, we know what you're going to do, which is you're going to write about it and you're processing. I mean, I can't wait for the album because it's going to be dope. It's probably, I know, however you process this, I mean, this moment is part of you processing this, but then maybe you write another book, maybe you, you know, you write new songs. So your work's going to be amazing. So, I mean, I know that's how I look at this moment. You know, we grew up in a time where, you know, we heard about what happened in the 60s, you know, like 70 kids, like we heard about what Malcolm and MLK and the marches, and as Black people, we stand on the shoulders of everything that your father's generation did specifically during the 60s. And most of our times it's been work towards improvement, whether that's technical improvements or whether that's been other work, but we've never gotten anywhere, you could say, right? And I think that in many ways, in a weird way, I think that America needed this. And the one and only silver lining with Donald Trump is that we had to hit rock bottom. If this is what you wanted, we got it. And he has united us in a weird way.
All his divisive tactics and disunifying voice has actually unified people. Yeah.
And you can argue in a way that Obama achievement that everybody collectively did as a collective gave us a false sense of hope, of reality, that nothing was wrong, that racism was gone. And we all knew as Black people that obviously that was an incredible achievement, but that didn't structurally mean that racism was not gone. But what Donald Trump shows is that, and I think this is what annoys him so much, is that if you look at the protest march, whether it's in 140 cities in America, it's probably in 50 cities in Europe so far, right? Something like that. It's all Obama's kids. They're all, most of them are young. They're diverse. They're gay. They're straight. They're Muslim. They're Christian. They're whatever. I just think, like, this is my list for him. Go and play golf. That's all right. Build your wall around the Trump Tower. Nobody cares. And, you know, create your TV network, because that's obviously what you're going to do. We'd be all right, but do us a favor. Just leave. You'd be all right. Mar-a-Lago, if you need a wall, build a wall around Mar-a-Lago. Hang out with your buddies. Nobody's mad. And it's almost like a thank you letter that we needed. When you're trading in this, like, everything is right, but I don't kind of want to do anything and I don't want to jeopardize anything. You get nothing, Jason. We needed this bottom in order to erupt. When I looked at people marching in Paris, in Berlin, you know, because people in the world can see how wrong this is. I was like, I never thought I would find something positive to say about Donald Trump. But this is the gift. He did unite us. Of course, he doesn't know that that's a gift. But it's just chill out, man. Just leave. We'll be all right.
Did you see Stockholm, Sagels Toy, Plattan? Yo, man, it was, yes, you know, yes, one of the guys that I was, yes, standing next to was like, oh, man glömmer alltså. Vi är fett många blattar i det här landet. Glömmer man ibland. I'm like, yeah, you know, so many. And it's exactly what you were saying, you know, like kids, a lot of them, like young kids that, like, you know, I was standing with QD3 as a Quincy. I was standing with my boy, yeah, David Jassy. I was standing with a few old timers, and it was very much the feeling of like, they don't even know who we are. You know, we're just like, just some older cats with like graying hair, you know, who are here, mm-hmm, to show solidarity. It was just beautiful, man. Entire Sagas Toy was covered with, you know.
Nice.
And seeing that solidarity, you know, to obviously black and brown bodies in Sweden, they know that discrimination exists in the United States. They know it that it exists in Sweden. But it's utterly really sympathizing with, you know, brothers and sisters in America, and also for their own lives here. And that's why it just, you know, infuriated with the callousness, the blindness, the unwillingness to understand that white Swedish journalists, you know, I had to read in the biggest newspaper yesterday in this entire country, Aftonbladet, a white middle-aged man writing that racial discrimination against black people does not exist in Sweden. We got rid of it after the Second World War. I'm like, yo, this is mind-blowing. How can you even publish lies? Like, I mean, it's just so wrong. It's actually a lie. You know, it's not, you know, and they're like, well, it's this journalist's opinion.
But Jason, you operate on a completely different experience than he does, right? He's highly miseducated, and also in this topic, you can be very intelligent, but you can be highly miseducated in something, right? But you know, the challenge I have with that is because diversity comes out of, people don't even know how racism impacts, right? You have institutional racism, right? Then you have personal bias / racism. Then you have the structural racism, right? These are all different structure. And I'm like, I don't have to tell you that. You know that as well as anybody. But if that's not even a topic in school, right? So the schools are based on what, 1950s? So we talk about how to get to the moon, or but we don't talk about things that are actually right here, right now, that are relevant, right? So, you know, what people talk about stuff that they feel comfortable about, and then they might dig a little bit in uncomfortable space, but not too much, because we kind of don't want to, it's working right now. So I remember in the 90s, I worked in a 3-star Michelin restaurant. I felt great. I talked to chef and I said, hey, one day I'm going to open a restaurant just like yours. And he said to me in French, very simple, it's not possible. And I said, what do you mean? It's not possible. So what do you mean? It's like, do you know a black 3-star chef? Show me. He said, I don't. Do you know any black chef that working in the kitchen, at just working in the kitchen at this level? He's like, I don't. He's like, okay, that's your answer. Right. And that was the core reason for me to move to America. Right. So America is amazing, and we are amazing as people in the world, because we can do multiple things. We can have, it can be the most racist country and also work on diversity the strongest. And we're doing that dirt work right now. So you're doing, what you're doing right now is you working for Max, right? That's it. We're working for Zion. So I'm glad that you're getting upset, and I'm glad that, I'm not surprised that the institutional bias and racism on the biggest platform are off, because who did they have to guide them? You know, think about before you, that were the opinion leader before you, but who was there before you? I mean, think about that, right? And you have such a power because you are in the living room, so people are comfortable.
I mean, this goes further than to just be opinions expressed by. Now, I'm talking about in Sweden, because it's such a specific experience, that like the Black experience in Sweden has its kind of specific flavor, you know, and that specific flavor is that, you know, I think the reason Swedish cops don't kill Black people to the same extent that they do in the United States is because they don't have to. Because if you're Black in Sweden, you really barely exist. I mean, you have... You're in a position of so little power, so low on the privilege ladder, like you're not even, you're like, you know, air, like a mosquito, just like, oof, like that. But talking to a friend, is like, even on the quote unquote good side, you know, some of Sweden's biggest podcasters, you know, all white, you know, talking about this issue, but never, you know, including any Black voices into it to, you know, to bring perspective, you know, because
in Sweden,
it's still, you know, white is right. And when things happen, even if it's things that concern, you know, Black people, rather than have a Black person explain and teach them so that they can unlearn and reprogram, you know, they explain it, you know. White-splaining is just very rampant in this country.
But I think, Jason, it's really about... We have to shoot very specifically on this information, because it's going to hurt. And if we come too hard right away, people's going to shut it off, right? But when you talk about, for example, you know, Sweden, just like America, has a very, we can do two great things. Sweden is one of the beautiful, most contributing countries to the Nelson Mandela and ANC. But at the same time, it could be the most racist place, right? Without even knowing it. So, for example, if you talk about institutional racism, right, or financial racism that Sweden are participated in, right, if you and I are going to buy, if I'm sending you chocolate, I'm sending you Belgian chocolate. So there's no cocoa beans in Belgium, right? If I would send you coffee up until like 5 years ago, the coffee comes from Ethiopia and Kenya, but we said French roast coffee, right? So right there, you're buying into a bias. And the problem is that you need, when Black people has a narrative in the world that we can do well in sports and music, and we're limited in our dialogue and conversations to those. White people can do great in sports and music, but then there are 40 other channels that even if there's bad white people, there's 30 other channels where you can also show art, culture, and amazing examples, right? But we are limited. So if you were to ask the average Swede about that, they never thought about it through that level of information. That doesn't make them racist in the traditional term, because they're not out there. But it is this misguided. The way maybe I'm misguided in the LGBTQ community, right? Like, so I think that it's important there, and we have a lot of work to do, both on both aisles, in America, and it's happening because the world is watching, but so in Sweden as well.
It's just been an extra layer of pain and anger is the kind of lack of understanding that I've been going through here. I've been really upset the past 36 hours. You know, before that, I was really more you know, in solidarity, and just because, you know, my roots are in the United States, I was feeling that pain. Now it's, you know, it's wholly in me because of my experiences just being Black in this country for 45 years.
But it's beautiful. It's getting your legs ready, Jason. It's honestly, you're in training camp and you're going for the match and you're just getting your legs ready.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is your process.
That's why I really need to talk to you, Marcus, because you understand both places.
Of course.
And like, you know, like a very wise friend and producer, Mohammed, said, you know, Sweden is a young country when it comes to racial diversity. When it comes to diversity of ideas, you know, Sweden has been this monolithic, homogenous kind of racially homogenous, culturally homogenous and monolithic country for a long time. And it's just the past basically 30 years where we're actually seeing some POCs do their thing in this country, not only in music and football, or, you know, but in other fields, you know. But even, you know, what, hearing you tell the story about what that chef told you is also something that's very, like, you know, that takes me to the seeing the Michael Jordan documentary, The Last Dance, you know. As soon as somebody doubted Mike in any way, he's like, and then it became personal. That's when he stepped up and pushed himself to the utmost of his ability. And to me, that's what you did. But it says a lot about a white mind that can't imagine a Black person in a position, because just like you said, he's never seen it. So he doesn't think it's possible. If you at that same moment would have told him, you know, I think one day that there'll be a Black president in the United States, he'd probably tell you, that's impossible, man. Have you ever looked at it? I mean, it's impossible. Obama showed it was possible. You showed it was possible.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But Jason, I think there's many experiences here. So I think, like, you know, when I listen to Damn, when I listen to your team, right, and knowing the guys behind you, like, you know, guys like Jens and Eric and Mons and everybody, right? When you hear that music, what color does it have? It has delicious. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if more people can work like musicians are working it, or creatives, because when you make a film, you and Simon are going in there and doing your stuff, you solve it by best practice. And it's that simple. So for me, I'm almost like, I always trust the artists. The artists are always what's showing us the way. I don't trust politicians. The politicians are voted in and out 4 years. Artists are here forever. You're going to write 20 years from now, and you're going to keep teaching 30 years from now. Do you know what I mean? So I have more faith in that.
I would say, one thing that I wanted to bring this up last week, because after the George Floyd murder happened, the music that I went back to was Bob, there's a lot of, I of course touched on Public Enemy and stuff like that too, but Bob Marley, in a time when there's protests mm-hmm. all in 140 cities,
hell yeah.
You know, speak of something, and I mean, Bob Marley unfortunately passed, more than 40 years ago, but his voice is still, when it comes to this and being a voice of the oppressed. So yeah, you're right. You know, what we do, what the arts do, it really echoes in kind of eternity.
And that's how that's how we learn, man. And that's how we were able to see. But it's very tough times here in Harlem, but it's also some of the best and most important times ever. On Saturday, there was decided on Friday that it's going to be a march in Harlem and a beautiful protest march. And when you do something in Harlem, most of the time it's on 125th and Adam Clayton Powell, which is five blocks away from when your father was stopped by a police officer with a gun pointed to his head. So for me, and of course for you, it has it's an historical place and it's an historical area. So right now I'm outside Red Rooster, and for the first time, I really feel like I don't know what's going to happen. You know, the pandemic has been tough enough, but obviously, with everything's been going on, the riots in Minnesota and Sacramento and Atlanta, and today there's going to be a beautiful, peaceful march, but like anything, you don't know what's going to happen. There's like probably 80% really good intent, good spirited people in there, 90 even. And then there's just a bunch of people that might be bored or have been sitting in their home or just upset in general. So it's hot in Harlem today. It's boiling and I'm nervous. I walked up there and imagine Harlem. It's peaceful, it's quiet. And in you have coming like 300 police officers. They come in their cars. And I have my son Zion on my shoulder, and he thinks it's so cool because he sees all these police cars coming in. Because I wanted to march with him. But then I turned around because it was just got too frantic. And it is something in the air. It's a friction in the air. At the same time, through the subways, you have about 600-700 of young and old, beautiful protesters coming. But there's an aura in Harlem like, don't mess with Harlem. And you can also tell all the business there are in Harlem and of Harlem, right? So the big boxes that are in Harlem, they're all boarded up. But the small boxes, the small restaurants like mine and Melba's, we in and of Harlem. I don't even get a gate, Jason. I don't even get a gate. I actually don't have the keys to Red Rooster because we never lock it. I mean, shouldn't even say that. We don't, because there's always somebody there. So I'm calling Nate, the musician. He's like, no, I'm outside listening to music. And then he said, what do you think we need to do? No, you build a good trust in the community. You don't have to do nothing. I'm sitting here. I'm listening to music. I'm going to sit here. And so when we talk about what gates you're going to build, whatever, it's more about building trust, building a bank of trust. So I go back and I walk up and I'm speaking with Melba Wilson, that owns Melba.
What's up, Melba? What's going on?
Hey, Marcus, do it all. We have to stand up or shut up.
Yes.
And we're standing up.
But you brought the sun here too, which is nice and beautiful. It's
really nice.
Yeah, what's up? I gotta raise it up. I gotta get up to 6'5".
I gotta get to 6'5".
That's speaking with Trinesse Woods from Sylvia's family. And I have to say, the police officer, they knew their place. They were respectful. They stepped back and let everybody speak. But as it go, you know, and this can go different ways, right? There's anger. And then this elderly woman just said, not here, not now. This is too important. I mean, vision this. We're half a block away from the Apollo. We're right across the street from the Studio Museum. We got the government building with Adam Clayton Powell behind us. The square is packed. You have police officers over here, the public over here. And it's hot. It's like sticky. People are, it can go anyway.
We're not even going to show up no more. Facts, son. We got people that don't look like us putting batteries in our back. Facts, son. If you want to do this, you ain't got to burn down nothing. Just your presence. Your presence. Your presence. Don't talk about it.
And I stand there in the middle. Tensions are high. This lady next to me, she might be like 70. You know, she might be your father's age. You know, this strong black woman. She says, brother, I was here when Brother Malcolm got shot. I was also here when Martin Luther King got killed. And I'm tired of being here when black brothers get killed. But I have to, pandemic or not. And I'm going to speak. And it just gave me the chills. Do you know what I mean? Like, here's a lady wearing mask. You know, she probably walked for a while, got there, and she got up and she's like, this is for the future. This is about the future and the present, but we're not going to loot. And there was no looting. So change is hard. And I know everybody wants to go back to their day jobs. Change is hard. What do you think the sittings was in the 60s? All the liberties that you and I have was created by your father's generation as a black person. So all the liberties Max and Zion's going to have, we have to do the work. We cannot give up when we're on the 10, we're on like 10 yard lines to go, yards to go here. We got to go over the finish line. How was it for you, Jason, when you like I was just, I was like, I saw London was protesting. Mm-hmm. I saw Paris was protesting.
I'm Amsterdam. Like, yeah.
That means that Stockholm's going to get it.
No, it was beautiful, man. I'm so happy I went because, of course, I was like, should I go? Shouldn't I go? You know, there's a pandemic going. Will there even be any people? Because the day before, a woman, I don't know her, but an activist named Aisha Jones organized a digital protest. And I was like, okay, how's that going to go down? So everybody posted on Instagram a check-in, you know, at the U.S. Embassy at 2 o'clock. And it's a fist, Sweden in solidarity with Black Lives Matter. And, mm-hmm. or they posted just a black square, you know, for Blackout Tuesday. And when you go in now on the location, U.S. Embassy in Sweden, it's just black and fists. Like just, it is like thousands and thousands of posts. So it really, so that was really dope to organize a digital thing. But when I roll up on Sergels Torg in the heart of Stockholm and it's just full, you know, you can't even get down to the square and you just hear it like, and it was also like sun was shining.
Yes.
Everybody was out in black. Most people were wearing masks.
Nice.
It was just dope to see so many my, you know, Afro-Swedish brothers and sisters out, and most of them young, you know, and just there. And of course, a lot of white people in solidarity too, you know. And just as I left, a gang had broken off, and they were, you know, throwing plastic bottles at some of the cops. And then, you know, as you know, Sweden is also a heavy väktarkultur. So you always have these security guards, you know, and they're running around and really like, you could tell that they're not, you know, trained to handle situations like this. And they're basically like just making the air more tense because their tension is so like, so visible, you know. And then I see three, you know, cop vans roll in and obviously some minor scuffles ensued, you know. And then I left. I walked down to Kungsträdgården, and it was like 5,000 people on Sergels Torg. I leave because I have to go home to my daughter and then go two blocks and I come to Kungsträdgården, which is a park in the center of Stockholm. And there's like 1,000 kids, 1,000 black kids there. Three kids have climbed up on the statue of whatever king, you know, Carl Gustav, whatever, some old 18th century king. They've climbed up with their, you know, Black Lives Matter banners and people, you know, with raised fists in the air. It was just beautiful, man. I felt like, well, we're here, you know, just like that cat next to me said that, you know, sometimes you forget that there's so many black and brown people in Sweden. It's really easy to forget because the perspective that we're fed here in this country is so white, man. It's so, so white, you know.
But, you know, Sweden is an important country because Sweden right now got the ear of the world, you know what I mean? And it's perceived as one way. And because of the pandemic and the fact that Sweden did pick its own lane, and there can be debates whether that was the right thing or the wrong thing, but at least Sweden did pick a lane. And so I do think that people's going to watch the important, the marches in Stockholm and the cities are important both in Sweden, but also externally as people's going to broadcast this through Instagram and so on, Facebook and so on, right? And I think that, you know, when people say Black Lives Matter, people then say right away, all lives matters. And I'm trying to always explain for people, like, of course, all life matters. But there is, when you deal with, basically, you can take the biggest stadium we have in Stockholm, right? And you can fill it with the George Floyds, the Breonna Taylor, the Eric Garner, the Trayvon Martin, right? The Emmett Till. So that happened. So it's not like the amount of fear that a black person has for basic things that we shouldn't have fear about. One thing that I talk about with my son is obviously the talk, right? When I'm going to have the talk that your father had with you. And the talk doesn't exist in a white family.
No, there's no need for it.
And every black person knows what the talk is. It is when you see a police officer, go the other way. Now it has to be, if you look at another person, go the other way. You know, when you, if you like bird watching, go the other way. So it's all this stuff like that, that people of color are dealing with, and it's a normal for us. So that's why people, that's just an example of racism that is generational. Another example is, which, because this is deep tissue and it's important, I think, that people in Sweden that are woke understand, right? So the biggest way for people to create personal wealth is very often they buy their house. Well, black people did not have access to banks and loans. How do most people buy their house? They put something down and then they go to the bank. We did not get loans. There was structural, like redlining, for example. Like if you live in one zip code, there are $13,000 spent on a child in school. And if you live in another zip code, could be two houses down, the $39,000 spent for a school, for a child, right? So these are things that then for generations changes education, it changes personal wealth. And then by the time when you're 20, how come the same kid, two kids from the same neighborhood have two very different experiences? So this is why we are so behind and so frustrated. We don't want better, we just want justice. And it's very important, I think, to unpack these things because, you know, Obama is almost like a prince or like in the world. So, America had a black president, so now that's over with. It's like saying if we get a female president, now there's not gonna be sexism anymore, right? So I think it's so important to unpack it in a way so the average person in whatever community you're speaking to understands it. And also for me, it's something that is lagged by people of color, but it's not a black issue. It's a human issue. It is, you know?
It's just beautifully put, Marcus. But that's one of the narratives here among some of the journalists and some of the papers I mentioned earlier, you know, Expressen, Sydsvenskan, Göteborgs-Posten, these places is like, well, why talk about race? You know, you shouldn't categorize people into categories of race, and why talk about black and white when, you know, we're all human? But they use that as a strategy to delegitimize the need for anti-racism, because basically what they want to say is that all this thinking about race and racism is made up by the anti-racist movement. And if you guys would just stop talking about it, then the problem would go away, because then it wouldn't exist, you know, which is really like flipping it in a way that I feel is just like mind bending a little, you know?
Yeah. But again, I do think that there is so much work that needs to be done. I can't wait until we see each other in Sweden. And when we have this moment as an open podcast, maybe we do an event,
some audience,
talk about it, because, because it there's a lot of work that needs to be done. This gap needs to be narrowed, and I have faith in America, and I have faith in Sweden. End of the day,
that's beautiful to hear you say that, because I've really doubted on both. You know, I've doubted on my faith in the United States, and, you know,
but you know why you do that? Because you love Sweden and you love America. You don't doubt your faith in anything that you don't care about.
But I spoke to my dad again just now, and he's like, you know, he's like, the United States was founded by slave owners. Slave owners wrote the Constitution, and they wrote, you know, and it was written in blood, in the blood of Native Americans and African Americans, you know. Now, Sweden doesn't have that same history. It has a very bloody history, but, you know, and a very much longer history. But still, yeah, I think it's been hard for me to, you know, which is really weird, right? That the pandemic, in a sense, kind of obfuscated, you know, it made the future very like opaque and hard to see. All of a sudden, the horizon was covered in fog, you know. It was uncertain times. What's going to happen after? When are we going to come out? What is it going to look like on the other side? You know, and then Ahmaud Arbery happened, and strangely enough, because that's as an event unto itself, you know, that kind of really echoes the what happened to Emmett Till, in a sense, you know. He wasn't even killed by cops, but and then of course Amy Cooper, and then George Floyd, and then I'm like, and now again, I'm like, wow, you know, now the horizon is even more like unclear, uncertain, what's going to happen, you know. So I've had problems with my faith and just maintaining kind of that optimism that you're you know giving me right now, Marcus, and it's really valuable to me to hear you speak in these terms, you know. It really is, brother. I
think there's a couple of things that you said. I do think that Swedish history, but we don't talk about it, because if you ask the Samer if you think Sweden is fair, ask them.
Yeah.
You know,
right?
What I mean?
Yeah.
We have indigenous people in Sweden, and you know, I don't see them on TV, and you know,
there's no representation.
Like, no representation. So there, you know, this has happened before, but it's uncomfortable to talk about. The other part about this is that I see hope, because I do see beautiful lot from the young ones coming out, and they are more diverse than ever, and they're more social media savvy than ever. So you can't lie as much, right? The second part about, very often when people say, let's guide, when you get frustrated, Jason, guide them to great information, like the podcast 1619, right? Where she talks about, why does something that happened 400 years ago have impact, right? But, and people don't realize, when you take someone's land and people come in and work as slaves, that builds generational wealth, right? It builds generational wealth. So 200 years into it, people are not even free. 150 years later, people are free, but they got to start with 40 mules, right? Like, do you understand? Like, people don't want to do the homework on what generational wealth looks like, right? So, because there is very few generational wealth about African Americans, because so many years and decades and generations, They had to just work. They couldn't get bank loans. They were the first to sent to war. They were the first that were sent into jails disproportionately, right? The father was brought, you know, sent to jails in Vietnam, or drugs was put into the community. How are you going to catch up? That is, for me, the institutional racism that is pushed in by its own government. Like, this is, so this is why something like Black Lives Matter, it's not like a soup, it's like a stew. There are structures to this stuff, right? Duck, 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 where everything actually matters. And now we have this moment. And again, I have to say that America is a country in extreme. And Donald Trump, go and play golf. You're done. Thank you. You've done your part. Sit on the side.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when you've been race baiting that long and you've been hating on
it. He's been doing it since the 80s, man.
Or, of course.
Or maybe even before that, you know.
Now, when you have a perfect storm, he's been race baiting since the 70s. And now when you have a perfect storm, you pissed off the immigrants. You pissed off black people. You pissed off women. Everybody who held the country together in America right now, the nurses, the majority of them are immigrants. People like Breonna Taylor, who have been the first responders, right? Why does the pandemic hit African American and brown people more? Because they don't have jobs where they can work from home, right? So during this time, America was kept together by people on a largely minimum wage. We need to say thank you. You need to go to Mar-a-Lago, play your golf. By the way, while you're at it, build your wall. Ciao, sayonara. And you and history will judge you. And there will be people on the island that will like you. Keep playing golf with them. But the rest of us, we're going to move on to something brighter and bigger and more peaceful, you know?
Yeah, but you know, this is the reason I haven't recorded an album for 6 years, because my last album, For Leave It to Darden, came out 2014, and I was really fucking angry. And I was angry at the racism that exists here and how it now was a part of the Swedish parliament and of people who don't even identify as racist, but all of a sudden they're echoing this racist narrative, you know. And I know where it comes from, you know. And for so many years, I didn't record it again because it's like, I don't want to be this angry guy. I want to be, you know, I don't want to be the angry black rapper. You know, I want to uplift. I want to be in another space. And it was eating me. It was eating a lot of my energy. And I didn't know how to break out of it, you know. But now I feel, I feel that the centrifuge is starting to, like you're saying, it's warming up. And I'm mad, man. And then it has to come out.
Yeah, but that's good. That's beautiful, Jason. That's beautiful.
That's
Jason.
One thing. The other thing is that, you know, and this is kind of from what I've been listening to, the podcasts, the news reports, what I've been reading, conversations with friends, you know, racism isn't just, are you a racist or are you not a racist? Racism is like, you know, like somebody explained it today on a news program I was listening to. Racism is like dust in the air. It's everywhere, you know. It's not just a question of are you a racist? Are you not a racist? We are born and socialized in a racially segmented, stratified, and structurally built society. So we all carry this stuff. I mean, I carry it, you carry it. You know, we all carry privilege. We all carry prejudice in different ways. And this is a brilliant moment for us all to check ourselves, introspect, reflect, and to do that work individually and collectively. And I just wanted to say, what we need is higher unlearning, you know? We need to unlearn the ideals and the stereotypes that we were fed at a young age from Disney films, from TV shows, from advertisement, from, you know, echoing this stuff. And that's how, you know, you look at a video like the Doll Test on YouTube. That's why a six-year-old kid automatically thinks that a white doll is more beautiful than a black doll, because it seeps in at an early age And we need that unlearning, you know, because I really want to stress the point that it's not just about, are you a racist or are you not a racist?
No.
You know, racism just exists in the air.
But let's start on the other end. I think that, you know, I'm actually right after this, I'm going to have a panel for chefs around the country and about race. So I called 6-7 of black chefs. They're amazing, female, male, black chefs. And I said, let's just have this talk. And I was like, let's start on the other end, Jason. I think it's better to say, when people say, oh, I'm colorblind, let's start on the opposite and say, I'm not, including
myself. Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah.
And how do I, let's start from the opposite. Let's start from, I have color bias, and I'm going to give you some examples. I was about, I don't know, 10. I don't know how old I was, but I was a kid. And Yannick Noah beats Mats Wilander in tennis. And I'm in a room with all my buddies, and we're fighting, and Mats Wilander's in the final. And I just raised my hand. And they're like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And that was one of the first time that I realized that I'm drawn to this guy with the dreadlocks. And I'm a kid, so it's not even racist, but it's color bias, right? I remember when Bob died, our teacher didn't cry. But then when John Lennon died, our teacher cried. And I ran home to my mom's like, what's up with this? Like, and she's like, don't listen. I told you, don't listen to the teacher. I'm like, I'm in a classroom. And it's like, my mom's like, told you. But it ended up being good because we went down to the store and get Uprising by Bob Marley. My mom was crying. And it was a heartfelt thing. And then I'm just going to give you a tiny little example. In the late 70s and late 70s, Bob Marley performed in Sweden, I think in 79 at Gröna Lund, but he wasn't allowed to come after that because he was smoking weed. Now, Rolling Stones, that Keith Richards was constantly talking about how he was bringing heroin with him everywhere, they were heroes in Sweden. So like iconic bands, like they were just openly talking about coke and heroin, they were allowed to perform in Sweden, but Bob Marley was not.
It's black music that they're you know, replicating, imitating, and trying to live up to, you know?
Yeah.
To not, as a white person in this country, to be like, okay, I don't understand this, so let me just be quiet and listen, you know? Or let me try to educate myself. To actually actively want to go out and criticize something you don't understand shows a lack of solidarity, where I'm like, and that's where I find it difficult to control my patience, you know?
Well, that's what privilege is, Jason, right? So
true.
They go, and that's my point is, I think it's great that you're going through and I'll go through these emotions, but then we got to land somewhere and bring people together, because both of you and I work with something that constantly bring people together, right? You work with music, I work with food, and it brings people together. And it's part of our process is to unpack this because it's highly complicated, and you know, when you see it, it might not make sense. When Colin Kaepernick started to take the knee, as peaceful as that was, people didn't understand it. Do you see me now? Do you understand it now? Right? So doing the work during the process, it could be messy, it could be ugly, it could be difficult, but post work, think about Germany when the Berlin Wall came down. Right. And now you think about, you go down to Berlin with your friends and, it's, you know, it's all East. Right.
Yeah,
but I'm sure
yeah.
six, you know, like 3-4 years leading up to that, it was horrible. Right. So we are doing the work, and you also have to have in mind, like, Sweden is not a country that has remember war. So it's very confrontational, defensive in a way. Right. It's not really the mechanism around confrontation. America is much more confrontational, and it's violent,
very, very violent. Yeah.
And it's hard and brutal, but the work needs to be done. You need to plow. You know, this is like, we're in a winter storm in December, and we got to plow through this. And I feel so much good work is being done, Jason. And then, yeah, there's going to be some knucklehead, but I'm I really bright about this. Last thing I want to leave you with is that I'm going to send you that little icon that I sent out, because I was like, I looked at it from three or four different things. It's like three fingers, right? The first one is mourn. You have to mourn. This is where everyone can do it, not as a black person,
preach,
as a person. Mourn.
Preach.
This is, you know, just mourn. Second part is reflect on how do I add to this chaos, and what can I reflect on and helping out? What books should I read? How should I get knowledge? How can I talk to my specific family or community about this? The third one should be love, compassion, and empathy.
Yeah.
You need love, compassion, empathy. And then the last one, which specifically impacts us in America, is very simple. Vote. That's it. Do you know what I mean? You vote.
Yeah, like Killer Mike said, bully him in the voting booth, you know?
Yes.
That's where you beat him up in the voting booth.
But I would love for you, Jason, to post your three that is important for you. You know what I mean?
The three I've been talking about, but this is mainly in response to people asking, what can I do? What can I do? Is identify, admit, and investigate, you know? Identify what racial prejudice or kind of oppressive attitudes exist in your family, in your workplace, amongst your friends, you know? What discriminatory practices do you witness? Which can you identify? And then admit them to yourself, you know? That this and if it's and if it's collective work, then admit them to each other. Talk about it. Like, wow, you know, I can see my privilege, and I've really noticed that I've identified it, and now I can admit to you that I have this privilege. And then investigate, you know, why, where does this come from? You know, once you've done those three steps, you're well on your way to a solution and how to change it. Then you've already arrived at the threshold of where change is possible, because you've identified, you've admitted, and you've investigated, looked into why, you know. So those have been my three this week. But, you know, I spoke to my auntie Jamie a while ago. You know, she's on 116th Street in St. Nick. We were talking about the pandemic, but she really had some beautiful things to say about just what you were speaking on, Marcus, that the world is going to need a lot of kindness now. You know.
Auntie is always welcome. You know that. Auntie's in the house. But I do think it's important that everyone has to really internalize this. And I'm going to give you just a tiny example, right? I love my father, Leonard. I love my dad. White man that raised three black kids. And he tried to protect us and try to guide us as much as he could. But he was a little bit homophobic. What do I mean with that? He wasn't, you know, during the HIV epidemic when it started in Sweden in the 80s and the early 90s, he wasn't as progressive as he was on race. And then one day, one of our favorite people, Michael, that actually was the one who taught my sister how to become a hairdresser, he died. And this was my dad really appreciated Mike because he was such a hard worker and it really taught my sister how to get in the game. He died of HIV. And it became the pivotal moment for our family. But our father, I've always felt he missed out because now he's dead. And as much as I love my dad, and it's very hard for me to talk about, my father has passed away. I hate to bring up his name in this way, but that was something we had to go through as a family. Don't be the guy that apologizes when the person is dead. So we all have work, you know what I mean? My dad was an amazing father, amazing person, but this was something he needed to work on, but it was too late. So that level of, we all have level of bias. We all have prejudice within us that can get ugly and can really get ramped up, or we can get educated about it. So Jason, you are such an important part in this puzzle. And I think maybe you're about to go through the most important time and the biggest gift you can give Sweden, because you're a voice that we need. I'm a voice that we need. And we need to like do the work now. And hopefully the process of this is helpful for us, but it's going to be even more helpful for our listeners.
Marcus, man, I can't tell you how important this, every conversation that I've had so far has been important. But this, I was really feeling bad when I came into this, and I needed that, that upliftment, that wisdom that you have, brother. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.